This episode of the Sustainability Scope is brought to you by AM Custom Clothing, a wholesale provider of sustainable printed and embroidered clothing for businesses, bands and brands.
Welcome to the Sustainability Scope with me, Alex.
And me, Mike.
The show that cuts through the noise about sustainability to help you make informed decisions, whether you're an individual or a business.
So today, Alex, I think this one flows on quite nicely from our chat recently about fair trade. Today we're going to talk about sustainability labels in more general, what they are and whether actually we think we can trust them or not, because I think both you and I have come across hundreds of them in our time, haven't we? And I think probably everybody listening has also, whether they really are conscious of them or not, come across hundreds of these little icons and logos and symbols that appear on the products that we buy. It can be quite confusing, I think, can't it?
Yeah, exactly. No, I think fair trade, obviously, like you referenced, is one of the more notable ones. So for anyone that wants to learn more about that, episode one is all about fair trade, so you can learn a little bit more. But yeah, it's confusing, and I think people want them. There's demand for it, obviously, as sustainability, it does feel like everyone's jumping on that bandwagon, but there is that confusion and concern that brands are just jumping on a bandwagon as opposed to it necessarily being authentic. And I think there are a lot of brands that are very authentic and possibly maybe lose out as a result of that versus less authentic.
They kind of get stuck in the noise, don't they? Get lost in it.
Exactly.
I mean, I think we found when we were researching for this episode, we found, didn't we, an article back from 2014, which seems like ages ago now, from The Guardian, who just the title, I think, sums it up better than anyone else could. They described it as the Wild West of eco labels. It really kind of is, and I don't think it's changed since 2014 either, has it?
No. I mean, I guess testament to that, we were looking earlier before this, before we started this conversation, and we saw the EU Commission did a study in 2020, which highlighted that 53% of examined environmental claims in the EU were found to be vague, misleading, or unfounded, with 40% that were just simply unsubstantiated. Over half.
I think that is probably one of the best examples of kind of this paradox that has kind of emerged in all of the sustainability labeling and messaging and everything that surrounds it, because very clearly there is a demand for these labels and logos, but also many of us probably struggle to trust them. There was a study, wasn't there, by Rebecca DuPont over in Florida, the University of Central Florida. It says, sustainability in the United States trends a new marketing demand for eco labels, yet brands often skip regulation to obtain these labels and break consumer trust. The country has over 200 eco labels, leaving consumers overwhelmed and confused. And basically what that study found was that because there were so many labels, even though people want them as a way to quickly and easily just see whether something is better or not, because there's so many of them, and as it points out, there is a very common trend to skip the regulation and just create your own little nice looking logo and slap it on your products, that people will begin to kind of be skeptical about them. And I think that's just human, isn't it? Like, if you're presented with so many choices and you are already aware that some of them are perhaps misleading, then suddenly if you don't know which ones you can trust, then you're not going to trust any of them.
Yeah. I think that it's the same. It's the same in the UK as the US in terms of the volume of labels. different stamps. And then, like, let's say, like, organic, you've got, like, five different ways of showing organic, be that, like, company's own, just the word, putting the word organic on something, or something more like an official accreditation. But I think you got that kind of area where people don't know the difference. And then, like you say, you lose the customer trust. And I think even with us talking about this, and all of these reports of greenwashing, I think it just perpetuates that cycle of trust being lost around those real claims, because there are a lot of real claims. There are a lot of real brands doing really good things. But some, like we said before, sometimes that can be lost in the noise that there is.
And it isn't even just, it's a case of good versus bad. There's a case of just simply X versus Y. We talked recently, I think it was in episode 2, wasn't it, about products that are recycled, whether they're sustainable or not, or better than other products. And if you have something that's made of recycled materials, you can slap a nice little green recycled logo on it, and then someone will look at that and go, oh, that's great, that's much better for the environment. And in some respects, if you take like-for-like products and one of them is recycled and one of them is not, then yes, the recycled one is absolutely better. But if both of those products produce plastic waste, they're not necessarily better than other alternatives. So that whilst the label is factually correct and not misleading, the understanding of what the label means could still be confused by the consumer. And therefore, it perpetuates the problem still, I think.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess the next question is, why are there so many of these labels? What has led to so many?
Would you like the answer in one word, Alex? Money.
If you can, yeah.
Money.
Yeah.
I think it genuinely is just as simple as that.
Yeah, I guess it's one of those, even like really good, well-meaning companies, there is this, it's a weird like conundrum in the sense that you do have to be financially sustainable as much as you have to be like ecologically sustainable. So by putting those labels on things and proving to customers that you are a good company and therefore helping you sell more allows you to tick both of those boxes, because if you're not financially sustainable, you're gonna essentially be gone. And
it kind of comes back to our conclusion in episode 1 when we were talking about fair trade, which was that a product that is better needs a label, because I, as someone who's interested in this stuff, does not have time to go and read hundreds of pages of reports for every single type of product that I will buy, and then use those reports to come to conclusions about which ones I should buy based on the balance of probabilities of one being slightly better than the other. I need to be able to go into a shop, see a label that I recognize, pick it up, put it in my basket, and that's it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think even like if you're trying to audit these things, there was comparatively recently, there was the HIG index, which is an index of clothing and the footwear industry, which is, from what I understand, like self-assessed. So brands can self-assess through the HIG index platform and then can show the sustainability of their products. So you'd think that is a fairly like surefire way to ensure that something is sustainable and fairly trustworthy. Although Norway's consumer watchdog concluded that the data was misleading as well. As we kind of spoke of before, it's just more misleading claims. And again, I guess this kind of shows how it can be confusing. Even if you're doing your own research, it becomes quite hard to understand whether the information you're looking at, even when it's backed by a third party, whether that is or self-assessed, whether that is actually legitimate.
And I think it's important actually there as well to say that when we use the word misleading, or other people, it's not our words, it's Norway's consumer watchdog. When other people use the words misleading. They don't necessarily mean intentional, because there is that connotation, isn't there, that it's intentional. Yeah. But part of the problem, I think, is because some of these accreditations and certifications are self-assessed, I naturally have a bias to assess myself better, even if I'm trying not to. And or I could simply be not as aware of other people's activities in the industry. If I'm a third party auditor and I spend a week in company A and then I go to company B and then company C, I've suddenly got three different perspectives of what's good and bad. So I might be able, I can then objectively say, well, B is doing X better, A is doing Y better, and C is doing Z better. So if we get them all to do the same things as well, then everyone's improved. But if I'm only looking at myself, I haven't got a comparison. So I might think I'm the best, even if I'm being asked a set of objective and quantifiable questions. I still could be coming out with the wrong conclusion because I only have one perspective, and that is my own, which is clouded in my own bias, either whether I'm aware of it or not.
Yeah, and I guess it comes back to as well that note that you were mentioning on recycled products. Something might be better, but not necessarily the best, and you haven't necessarily misled someone intentionally, but it might be that it's just not quite as good, but it is still good. So there are kind of, yeah, there's many shades of gray, I think, in this area. So I guess the next kind of element to this is how to identify what is good and what is bad. And I guess you hit the nail on the head there, Mike, in the sense that external third party auditing or accrediting, where they're looking at multiple companies, is inherently going to be better than, or you would assume from the most part, is going to be inherently better than someone who's self-assessing, because they do have all those different perspectives that they can compare it to, as well as potentially other industries. It might be that they're not necessarily just looking at one industry, like fair trade. It's not just one industry they're looking at. They've got coffee, chocolate, gold. So they really get in a broad.
They have the opportunity variety. To compare and look at different perspectives, and as well, they have more resources to develop their standards better. I'm assuming. I mean, that fair trade is far bigger, so you're going to assume that they're going to have much more in terms of capacity behind them. But as well, I mean, let's be clear. It doesn't mean that third-party accreditations that involve audits are going to be infallible, because there is always a risk that somebody comes along and says, I'll give you this certificate in exchange for an envelope full of £50 notes. And I'm absolutely not accusing anyone of doing this. I'm just saying it's merely a possibility. Now, that doesn't mean you should look at it and go, well, absolutely, all of these accreditations are full of corruption, so I can't trust them. Because I genuinely don't think that is the case. I think there are people who are passionate about doing better, improving people's lives, protecting the environment, et cetera, et cetera. And they genuinely do things for the betterment of everybody. But they can't be completely infallible. So we just need to kind of just caveat what we're saying with that. But at the same time, they are by far better than something that's self-assessed, because you are adding more steps for somebody who wanted to maybe get around the rules slightly. You're making it far more difficult for them to be able to do that.
Yeah, I think coming on to going back to your element of being infallible, I don't think necessarily, again, in a slightly different context, that is a bad thing. As I remember, there was a notable kind of band that were selling T-shirts, and there was a great deal of controversy around these T-shirts, because it turned out that I think someone was being bullied or something in the factory, and they were being paid an amount that wasn't aligned with Western amounts, and that created a great deal of PR in the press as being a really bad thing, and this brand not being one you could trust. But when you looked at the kind of, I guess, the audit chain, they'd identified the problem. They'd then taken the appropriate action. The person who was involved in the bullying had been like dealt with appropriately. And all of these things had happened off the back of it appropriately, in the same way that would happen over here. It, like, in any company, it's probably going to be bullies. There's probably going to be things that go wrong, and it gets dealt with because that's what audits are about. They're designed to help you improve, not to just say you are doing something bad, cancelled. Like,
it isn't a case of perfect or complete failure. It's continual improvement, isn't it? I was just going to say, it's one of my favorite terms, continual improvement.
And I think that's very hard for us as consumers to comprehend, that actually something might not be perfect, but that's what these things are designed for. So I think, again, we can't take these critiques from journalists or otherwise necessarily as kind of gospel. As I mean, firstly, a lot don't necessarily understand the mechanics of the supply chains and the accreditations in place. And secondly, I think it's a process, not a finished result. So I think it's important to appreciate that about certifications, that it's the journey, and it'll continually be improving. It's never going to be perfect, and if you can find a job in the UK that is absolutely perfect in every way, well, stay there.
Yeah,
because there's not a lot. No, there's always going to be bad eggs, I think.
But at the same time, and just to kind of double back on ourselves a little bit, there are very clearly instances where somebody just would never get an accreditation because they were actively evil people, locking fire doors, forcing people to work overtime, paying them a pittance, perhaps physically abusing them at the same time. Like, that's not what we're saying here. Like, the example you've given is an auditing system that's designed to pick up minor problems. Minor's not necessarily the right word, but pick up problems that are manageable, identify it, categorize it, treat it, fix the solution, try and stop it from happening again, and then move on from it. But sadly, like you say, it doesn't make a great headline, does it, to say company producing merchandise for famous band is found to have had internal issue that was rectified and recorded by an external body and is now on a track to improving its operations. Just not a snappy headline, is it?
No.
And also, there's a good likelihood that the people involved in writing the article and or the headline are not necessarily as attuned and sort of dialed into all of these intricacies of it, because why would you be?
No, I think they probably have a vague knowledge, enough to get by. And I guess it's journalism, isn't it? You do as much research as you can, but ultimately you've got a story to sell. So a bit like we were kind of saying before, money is kind of the catalyst, isn't it?
And again, just to caveat, that's not to say that all journalism is just about making money or corrupt in any way, but you've got to be realistic in that someone's on a deadline and there's what seems like a story, they're going to run with it, aren't they?
Indeed. So I guess the next element would be like, what is a kind of, we've mentioned third party labels are the ones that are potentially that are more trustworthy.
What ones can we trust?
Yes,
exactly. I think actually, perhaps before we talk about ones we can trust, maybe we look at the ones that are easy to discredit or discount.
Okay.
So pickethical.com, pick-ethical.com, actually have quite a good resource about this. And they've got a list of what they call greenwashing phrases to look out for. So these may be as part of an accreditation, or they just may be in the general marketing message. So the terms that they've got in their list that you should kind of see as a bit of a red flag are things that are just described as eco-friendly, plant-based, earth-friendly, natural, biodegradable, ocean-friendly, or 100% natural product. Now, you might be questioning a couple of those, Alex, particularly the biodegradable one. But the example that they have for biodegradable is they say it's a term that people will often confuse with compostable. Now, I probably have done that because we kind of see biodegradable as something that breaks down. And if you've ever composted anything, you throw a bunch of old like vegetable cuttings or something in a compost bin, and then a few weeks later it's kind of turned into a brown mush, hasn't it? That's what people picture when they hear the word biodegradable. But what they've said is a product that is biodegradable can still take decades to break down. And
I'm guessing it requires specialist kind of environment as well.
Potentially. But even if it does break down, it can still leave toxic materials behind. Whereas compost is, you throw away an apple core and within a very relatively short period of time, suddenly it's stuff that you can go and use to fertilize your crops.
Makes sense.
So they're things to kind of, and I think it's just because they're overused. They've all of those terms have become fads in one way or another, and because there's no regulation or even real definition of what they mean, it's very easy for people to jump on them. Again, actually, it was Pick Ethical that we looked at. They came up with a list of ones that they of labels they say you can trust. And I think there's a couple in there that I'm not as familiar with, but the vast majority of them are ones that we're very, very familiar with, you and I, Alex.
Yes. Go on, let's hear them.
So there's B Corp, Rainforest Alliance, Fair Trade, FSC, so Forest Stewardship Council, Soil Association, Oecotex. They're the ones that I was very familiar with. Then a couple that I wasn't: Cradle to Cradle, 1% for the Planet, and Cruelty Free International.
And then I guess a couple that we're also familiar with that aren't on that list. You've got GOTS, which stands for the Global Organic Textile Standard. If you're buying clothing, that's like the gold standard of organic fabric. You've also got the EU Eco Label, which again is it's kind of held to a very high standard. WRAP as well, spelled WRAP. That's again another reliable standard, and Social Accountability International. Those are more kind of textile based standards for the most part.
You missed one, the Fair Wear Foundation.
Yes.
Again, that's another textile one.
Yeah, I guess one that's a little bit broader would be PETA, for those who are vegan. I'm pretty sure I don't need to say that to anyone who's vegan, but if you're worried about animal welfare, PETA's very kind of well-trusted accreditation, probably one of the biggest of its kind, if not the biggest. So I think they're probably the most notable ones. Is there anything else you can think of? Sorry, Mike.
You're a Mac user, aren't you? So you wouldn't see, but there's the Energy Star one, which is, I think, is an American. It's an American label, but it's used on electrical equipment. I don't know exactly what it means, but my understanding of it is that it's relatively trustworthy as well.
I guess it's Carbon Trust too as well.
Trust, forgot about them.
Yeah, when they're certified as carbon neutral or zero.
Just because we haven't talked about it doesn't mean that it isn't trustworthy. That wasn't an exhaustive list, but I think if they're not ones that you immediately recognize, it's probably worth to just do a little bit of digging, maybe. So to conclude,
I guess before we conclude, so you're not having to look at every label on every brand, I think one positive that can be taken from this is giving brands a bit of loyalty, and shopping, once you found someone that you know has good accreditations that you can trust, stick with them. And then you don't have to be checking every time, and you're kind of essentially helping these more sustainable brands grow and do what they do, rather than buying from lots of different places, as then you don't have to figure it out every time. So that might be, I don't know, if you're like me, you get your toilet paper on a subscription service from an eco-friendly supplier. I don't have to worry about that when I go to, say, Tesco, Sainsbury's, or whatever your superstore market store is. And just, I think to some degree, makes your life a little bit easier.
So to conclude then, we've covered quite a lot of ground. I think basically what we've said is that people want these labels because, as we've already discussed in previous episodes, it's hard to do an assessment yourself. So you need to rely on someone you can trust. But at the same time, because there are so many of them, and as we've established, there are hundreds of different labels, it can be very difficult to know which ones to trust. Even made even more so the fact that some of them are actively just not very good. So because some of them are labeled as poor or bad, then if you're not able to trust them, it makes people question them all. So we found a couple of ones that we think are quite good and which should be sort of trusted by the majority of people. But let's just kind of summarize a little bit of a takeaway thought in the should people be trusting of them? Are they good? I think they are. I think you'd probably agree with me.
Yeah, I think they're good. And I think, as we've seen from a lot of these, I guess, debunked indexes and things like that, where they have been criticized, there are bodies out there that are trying to maintain the standard. So I think, for the most part, we should have a degree of trust in the fact that if we're considerate about our choices and do a little bit of research, we will end up probably buying the right thing. And I think, on the flip side, those who aren't doing the right thing, more than likely, it's gonna come out at some point, and that's gonna tarnish them. So I think people are inclined to do the best that they can. And I think, like we said before, it's a journey, and I think we will get better and better. And I think greenwashing will become less and less of a thing, or at least intentional misleading will become less of a thing. There's still going to be mistakes, but I think so long as we're making smart choices, it's better to buy eco-friendly, sustainable products than just disregard it because you assume everything's a lie.
Yeah. Don't let perfect be the enemy of good.
Yeah,
I think that's quite a good summary of it. And I think you're right. It will become easier over time because more products will just become naturally better than they were. Partly probably through government regulation, partly just through market forces. But yeah, I think that's quite a good way to end it. We can trust them. We can trust some of them, but don't let untrustworthy ones force you to not trust any of them.
No, and the best way you can kind of perpetuate this and keep being more sustainable is to subscribe to this podcast and share it with your with your friends.
Yes, don't forget to, what is it, like, subscribe and follow.
Exactly.
Comment, whatever.
Yes, leave a review,
do the thing.
Yes.